Chapter 113. Confidential and accidental, attired no more in Captain Cuddle's sable slops and sou'wester hat, but dressed in a substantial suit of brown livery, which, while it affected to be a very sober and demure livery indeed, was really as self-satisfied and confident a one as tailor need desire to make, Rob the Grinder, thus transformed as to his outer man, and all regardless within of the captain and the midshipman, except when he devoted a few minutes of his leisure time to crowing over those inseparable worthies, and recalling, with much applauding music from that brazen instrument, his conscience, the triumphant manner in which he had disembarrassed himself of their company, now served his patron, Mr. Carker, inmate of Mr. Carker's house, and serving about his person, Rob kept his round eyes on the white teeth with fear and trembling, and felt that he had need to open them wider than ever. He could not have quaked more, through his whole being, before the teeth, though he had come into the service of some powerful enchanter, and they had been his strongest spells. The boy had a sense of power and authority in this patron of his that engrossed his whole attention, and exacted his most implicit submission and obedience. He hardly considered himself safe in thinking about him when he was absent, lest he should feel himself immediately taken by the throat again, as on the morning when he first became bound to him, and should see every one of the teeth finding him out, and taxing him with every fancy of his mind. Face to face with him, Rob had no more doubt that Mr. Carker read his secret thoughts, or that he could read them by the least exertion of his will, if he were so inclined, than he had that Mr. Carker saw him when he looked at him. The ascendancy was so complete, and held him in such enthrallment, that, hardly daring to think at all, but with his mind filled with a constantly dilating impression of his patron's irresistible command over him, and power of doing anything with him, he would stand watching his pleasure, and trying to anticipate his orders, in a state of mental suspension, as to all other things. Rob had not informed himself perhaps in his then state of mind it would have been an act of no common temerity to inquire whether he yielded so completely to this influence in any part, because he had floating suspicions of his patrons, being a master of certain treacherous arts in which he had himself been a poor scholar at the grinder's school. But certainly Rob admired him, as well as feared him. Mr. Carker, perhaps, was better acquainted with the sources of his power, which lost nothing by his management of it. On the very night when he left the captain's service, Rob, after disposing of his pigeons, and even making a bad bargain in his hurry, had gone straight down to Mr. Carker's house, and hotly presented himself before his new master with a glowing face that seemed to expect commendation. "What, Scapegrace?" " said Mr. Carker, glancing at his bundle, "have you left your situation, and come to me? Oh, if you please, sir," faltered Rob, "you said, you know, when I come here last I said, returned Mr. Carker, "what did I say? If you please, sir, you didn't say nothing at all, sir," returned Rob, warned by the manner of this inquiry, and very much disconcerted. His patron looked at him with a wide display of gums, and shaking his forefinger, observed, "You'll come to an evil end, my vagabond friend, I foresee. There's ruin in store for you. Oh, if you please, don't, sir." Cried Rob, with his legs trembling under him. "I'm sure, sir, I only want to work for you, sir, and to wait upon you, sir, and to do faithful whatever I'm bid, sir. You had better do faithfully whatever you are bid," returned his patron, "if you have anything to do with me." "Yes, I know that, sir," pleaded the submissive Rob. "I'm sure of that, sir. If you'll only be so good as try me, sir. And if ever you find me out, sir, doing anything against your wishes, I give you leave to kill me. You dog. " said Mr. Carker, leaning back in his chair, and smiling at him serenely. "That's nothing to what I'd do to you, if you tried to deceive me."
"Yes, sir," replied the abject grinder. "I'm sure you would be down upon me dreadful, sir.
I wouldn't attempt for to go and do it, sir, not if I was bribed with golden guineas."
Thoroughly checked in his expectations of commendation, the crestfallen grinder stood looking at his patron, and vainly endeavoring not to look at him, with the uneasiness which a cur will often manifest in a similar situation.
"So you have left your old service, and come here to ask me to take you into mine, eh?"
" said Mr. Carker.
"Yes, if you please, sir," returned Rob, who, in doing so, had acted on his patron's own instructions, but dared not justify himself by the least insinuation to that effect.
"Well," said Mr. Carker, "you know me, boy?"
"Please, sir, yes, sir," returned Rob, tumbling with his hat, and still fixed by Mr. Carker's eye, and fruitlessly endeavoring to unfix himself.
Mr. Carker nodded.
"Take care, then."
Rob expressed in a number of short bows his lively understanding of this caution, and was bowing himself back to the door, greatly relieved by the prospect of getting on the outside of it, when his patron stopped him.
"Halloa!"
he cried, calling him roughly back.
"You have been shut that door."
Rob obeyed, as if his life had depended on his alacrity.
"You have been used to eavesdropping. Do you know what that means?"
"Listening, sir?" Rob hazarded, after some embarrassed reflection.
His patron nodded.
"And watching, and so forth."
"I wouldn't do such a thing here, sir," answered Rob.
"Upon my word and honor, I wouldn't, sir. I wish I may die if I would, sir, for anything that could be promised to me. I should consider it as much as all the world was worth, to offer to do such a thing, unless I was ordered, sir."
"You had better not. You have been used to babbling and tattling," said his patron with perfect coolness.
"Beware of that here, or you're a lost rascal,"
and he smiled again, and again cautioned him with his forefinger.
The grinder's breath came short and thick with consternation. He tried to protest the purity of his intentions, but could only stare at the smiling gentleman in a stupor of submission, with which the smiling gentleman seemed well enough satisfied, for he ordered him downstairs, after observing him for some moments in silence, and gave him to understand that he was retained in his employment. This was the manner of Rob the Grinder's engagement by Mr. Carker, and his awe-stricken devotion to that gentleman had strengthened and increased, if possible, with every minute of his service. It was a service of some months' duration, when early one morning, Rob opened the garden gate to Mr. Dombey, who was come to breakfast with his master, by appointment. At the same moment his master himself came, hurrying forth to receive the distinguished guest, and give him welcome with all his teeth.
"I never thought," said Carker, when he had assisted him to alight from his horse, "to see you here, I'm sure. This is an extraordinary day in my calendar. No occasion is very special to a man like you, who may do anything, but to a man like me, the case is widely different."
"You have a tasteful place here, Carker," said Mr. Dombey, condescending to stop upon the lawn, to look about him.
"You can afford to say so," returned Carker.
"Thank you."
"Said Mr. Dombey, in his lofty patronage, anyone might say so. As far as it goes, it is a very commodious and well-arranged place, quite elegant."
"As far as it goes, truly,"
returned Carker, with an air of disparagement at once that qualification.
"Well, we have said enough about it, and though you can afford to praise it, I thank you nonetheless. Will you walk in?" apostrophe, Mr. Domney, entering the house, noticed, as he had reason to do, the complete arrangement of the rooms, and the numerous contrivances for comfort and effect that abounded there. Mr. Carker, in his ostentation of humility, received this notice with a deferential smile, and said he understood its delicate meaning, and appreciated it, but in truth the cottage was good enough for one in his position better, perhaps, than such a man should occupy, poor as it was. But perhaps to you, who are so far removed, it really does look better than it is, apostrophe he said, with his false mouth distended to its fullest stretch. Just as monarchs imagine attractions in the lives of beggars. Apostrophe, he directed a sharp glance, and a sharp smile at Mr. Domney as he spoke, and a sharper glance, and a sharper smile yet, when Mr. Domney, drawing himself up before the fire, in the attitude so often copied by his second in command, looked round at the pictures on the walls. Cursorily as his cold eye wandered over them, Carker's keen glance accompanied his, and kept pace with his, marking exactly where it went, and what it saw. As it rested on one picture in particular, Carker hardly seemed to breathe, his sidelong scrutiny was so cat-like and vigilant, but the eye of his great chief passed from that, as from the others, and appeared no more impressed by it than by the rest. Carker looked at it, it was a picture, that resembled Edith, as if it were a living thing, and with a wicked silent laugh upon his face, that seemed in part addressed to it, though it was all derisive of the great man standing, so unconscious beside him. Breakfast was soon set upon the table, and, inviting Mr. Domney to a chair which had its back towards this picture, he took his own seat opposite to it as usual. Mr. Domney was even graver than it was his custom to be, and quite silent. The parrot, swinging in the gilded hoop within her gaudy cage, attempted in vain to attract notice, for Carker was too observant of his visitor to heed her, and the visitor, abstracted in meditation, looked fixedly, not to say sullenly, over his stiff neckcloth, without raising his eyes from the tablecloth. As to Rob, who was in attendance, all his faculties and energies were so locked up in observation of his master, that he scarcely ventured to give shelter to the thought that the visitor was the great gentleman before whom he had been carried as a certificate of the family health, in his childhood, and to whom he had been indebted for his leather smalls. "Allow me," apostrophe said Carker suddenly, "to ask how Mrs. Domney is?" Apostrophe, he leaned forward obsequiously, as he made the inquiry, with his chin resting on his hand, and at the same time his eyes went up to the picture, as if he said to it, "Now, see, how I will lead him on." Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Domney reddened as he answered. "Mrs. Domney is quite well. You remind me, Carker, of some conversation that I wish to have with you." Apostrophe, "Robin, you can leave us," apostrophe said his master, at whose mild tones Robin started and disappeared, with his eyes fixed on his patron to the last. "You don't remember that boy, of course?" apostrophe he added, when the enmeshed grinder was gone. "No," apostrophe said Mr. Domney, with magnificent indifference. "Not likely that a man like you would." "Hardly possible," apostrophe murmured Carker. "But he is one of that family from whom you took a nurse. Perhaps you may remember, having generously charged yourself with his education?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe, is it that boy?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe," said Mr. Domney, with a frown. "He does little credit to his education, I believe." "Apostrophe, why, he is a young rip, I am afraid," apostrophe returned Carker, with a shrug. "He bears that character. But the truth is, I took him into my service because, being able to get no other employment, he conceived, had been taught at home, I dare say, that he had some sort of claim upon you, and was constantly trying, to dog your heels with his petition. and although my defined and recognized connection with your affairs is merely of a business character, still I have that spontaneous interest in everything belonging to you." That apostrophe, he stopped again, as if to discover whether he had led Mr. Dombey far enough yet. And again, with his chin resting on his hand, he leered at the picture. "Carker," apostrophe said Mr. Dombey, "I am sensible that you do not limit your apostrophe service," apostrophe suggested his smiling entertainer. "No, I prefer to say your regard," apostrophe observed Mr. Dombey, very sensible, as he said so, that he was paying him a handsome and flattering compliment to our mere business relations. "Your consideration for my feelings, hopes, and disappointments, in the little instance you have just now mentioned, is an example in point. I am obliged to you, Carker." Apostrophe, Mr. Carker bent his head slowly and very softly rubbed his hands, as if he were afraid by any action to disturb the current of Mr. Dombey's confidence. "Your allusion to it is opportune," apostrophe said Mr. Dombey, after a little hesitation. "Apostrophe, for it prepares the way to what I was beginning to say to you, and reminds me that that involves no absolutely new relations between us, although it may involve more personal confidence on my part than I have hitherto apostrophe distinguished me with," apostrophe suggested Carker, bending his head again. "I will not say to you how honored I am, for a man like you well knows how much honor he has in his power to bestow at pleasure. Apostrophe, Mrs. Dombey and myself," apostrophe said Mr. Dombey, passing this compliment with august self-denial, "are not quite agreed upon some points. We do not appear to understand each other, yet Mrs. Dombey has something to learn. Apostrophe, Mrs. Dombey is distinguished by many rare attractions, and has been accustomed, no doubt, to receive much adulation," apostrophe said the smooth, sleek watcher of his slightest look and tone. "But where there is affection, duty, and respect, any little mistakes engendered by such causes are soon set right." Apostrophe, Mr. Dombey's thoughts instinctively flew back to the face that had looked at him in his wife's dressing room when an imperious hand was stretched towards the door, and remembering the affection, duty, and respect expressed in it, he felt the blood rush to his own face quite as plainly as the watchful eyes upon him saw it there. "Mrs. Dombey and myself," apostrophe he went on to say, "had some discussion." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.